connect and experience art at the Northfield Arts Guild. Visit our galleries, arts festival, and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The Guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination.
Good morning, this is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. Thank you for listening to the show that celebrates creating and stories, and I am ready to tune my imagination today, and I hope that you'll join me in that journey. You know, here's what I wrote when I never know what's going to come out when I start writing in my intro, and so here's what I wrote. I wrote, hello again, because actually we are back again. This is very exciting to be live in the studio. Here we are again, and I'm thrilled to be live again. And I thought, whoa, I wrote the word again 3 times in 2 sentences. That is not okay. And sometimes that happens. You know, when you're writing, you want to sound like you're talking, but sometimes things, you know, catch things like that. I know that's not a good idea, but you know what? I'm going to leave it in. And that's why I decided to say it today, because it's kind of like when you say that word again, again, it's like a little calling, right? It's a calling back to the KYMN studios, to the board and the microphone of Art Zany Radio. And I'm very grateful to KYMN for all the support they've given me. And I absolutely hope to be here again and again. And one of the things I love doing is looking out the studio window and witnessing the Northfield frame from our view of downtown and the world outside our window today. There's piles of snow, and it looks like winter. It's that fresh, white, wondrous snow, and it's very pretty, actually, with the sun shining and sparkling snow, and it's kind of amazing when we have worlds like that. And it's a good time, too, because I think we're sliding into the end of winter. At least that's what I like to believe, that March is right around the corner, and, you know, there's a feeling of, it's okay. I can make through these last few days of cold and snow because there's going to be more sunshine, warmer temperatures, longer days. And one thing I've been doing to sort of remind myself of winter is paying attention to the sounds of winter, thinking, you know what, I might need to remember those memories on some hot, sticky July day in the near future. And I love that squeaky sound of snow. All of you who've been around here know that there's that crunch that your footsteps make. And it's kind of like this giant keyboard, but a keyboard maybe with only a few notes. And it's kind of just amazing to immerse yourself in that creak, cring, crackle. I don't know what the sound is. I've been trying to come up with the words, but that's where I went. And it's like as you go down your path, you've got company. And you cannot do that in the summer. So take a stroll now. Get to enjoy the winter. You know, feel that layer of snow on the bottom of your soul as you take a footstep. There's a texture to that that's, I think it's kind of like hard sand. I'm imagining somebody out there who lives in a world that never gets snow and trying to understand what we're talking about or that's never experienced it. And it, you know, it really makes you feel grounded to walk on that kind of snow because there's a sturdiness to it that's not like other kinds of snow. We have, I would love someday, I know that there are other cultures that have multiple ways of describing snow. I don't think we do a good job doing that in the English language. We have to say a million words to say what we all know. And it's something that's kind of amazing to think about. You know, I love, too, when you're driving, the sound of your car makes even a different sound. It's like a little purr as you roll down the road. There's that cold silence that you can only hear on a winter's night. The air is so vast, and there's just nothing like that in the summer. So I'm going to take a little bit of that good winter when it comes around again. I'm ready. And, you know, I'm also thinking in winter, when I woke up, the streets were plowed, and I have so much gratitude for those snowplow drivers and their plows and anyone keeping us connected with our world moving. During these last few years, I think that's one of the great takeaways. I hope that we've all gained some recognition of how many people are essential to making our world happen. And my greatest wish is that all of us now see and show gratitude for all of the folks that help us to make life possible. I don't even want to begin to name them because there's just so many. And those essential folks are not unlike those gifts of nature. They're amazing, shiny stars in the aspects of our life. And we need to connect and hold fast to these elements of our life because they will all pass. This whole thing is temporary. And that's one of the gifts that I've discovered in these last few years. We have to find each other, and, you know, during our time together, we have to help see what's in the world, what's in the person you share this world with, and how that's like what's inside of you. Because I think there's a lot more alike in us than not. So I think that's why we're here in the Art Zany Radio studio, to make connections and to better live alive in the moments. So I think the part of what I've been thinking about some of these things is the book I'm going to introduce you to this week. And I'm very excited. I am super delighted to welcome back an author and teacher that has been just an amazing inspiration. She's an incredible talent, and she has great stories, and I can't wait to tell you more. Let me turn on the mic and welcome Mary Blackwell to Art Zany Radio.
Thank you, Paula, and great to to be back in the studio, as you say.
I know, it's so exciting for us to be here again live, and then for you to return with your next project, which I want to tell our listeners a little bit about. Her new book is a middle grade novel. It's called The Worry Knot, Untangling Middle School Life, and Rourke is the character in the book, and he is hoping for this perfect seventh grade year. Don't you always love that about the fall, right? Like every year you think, this one's going to be the one. I'm going to get this right. But he is a boy who worries a lot. And it affects his friendships, his sleep, his stomach. And it's certainly a story about compassion, unexpected discoveries, and discovering that no one is perfect, just different. You can get lots more details about Mary at her website, Mary Blackwell. It's BLECKWEHL.com. She's the author of some of our family's favorite picture books, Henry, You're Late Again, Henry, You're Hungry Again, and then her most recent one, which she was here in the Art Zany Radio studio, is Claire's Hair, A Tale of Hair, Heart, and Humor, and also the birthday cookbook, which I don't know a lot about, so we're going to ask you about that as well. There's an event coming up at Content Bookstore, which is where you can get copies, contentbookstore.com. And that event is on Thursday, March 3rd, which is right around the corner at 7 o'clock. So I hope you'll join Content and Mary for that. I want to ask you about that birthday cookbook, because since you've been on, which is about 4 years ago, mm-hmm. I looked at your website and I thought, I missed the birthday cookbook. So it feels like we're celebrating the release of The Worry Knot. I bet there's something in the birthday cookbook to help us celebrate.
Yes, the birthday cookbook isn't a storybook in terms of a story arc. It's a cookbook, right?
Yeah.
And it's for kids. It's called the birthday cookbook. It is one of, I believe, six in a series that comes out from Black Rabbit Books Publishing out of Mankato. But I only wrote the birthday cookbook. I think the other ones are different holidays and so on. And although it's called the birthday cookbook, it has recipes in that's pretty generic, that kids, it's easy for them to not have to use the hot oven and so on. So it's just some fun things. And the graphics, which I am not responsible for, are so sweet in it. So it's just a kind of a fun cookbook for kids. So yes, that one came out during COVID. That's why you didn't see me in studio or talk much about it. Because it's mainly for this, what we call the school and education market, where schools and libraries order it. Probably aren't going to find that at Content, but you could order it through them.
Oh, how fabulous. Well, you're always cooking up something, so that's yes. That's quite exciting. I think kids, you know, birthdays are big deals when you're a kid, and kids like to find ways, you know, to make it special for them to do something, too.
Yes, to individualize it, and to rather than just mom or dad or grandpa or grandma kind of running the show, for kids to come up with their own ideas and like, you know, I made that.
Right. And so that's wonderful. I'm delighted. And again, this is certainly an exciting time because it's your publication of The Worry Knot, Untangling Middle School Life, which we all know needs a lot of untangling. And this is really exciting. It's a transition for you from writing picture books into a middle grade book. Tell me about making that transition. It's a different way of writing.
It definitely is. Obviously, the first one that people would notice is it's longer and it's for a different target audience. I'm a children's writer. I don't write for adults. And of course, a children, that's all the way from, birth to, however long you think of a child's life, I guess, mainly through middle school. I started out writing picture books and I spend a lot of time with ideas and I've got, I don't know how many manuscripts sitting on my computer. They may always sit there and not turn into a book. But when I sit down, when I think of an idea and a topic and I sit down, it's really it's the target audience that I'm thinking about writing for that will sometimes determine the length of the book. But more than not, it's the theme and the characters and kind of where they take me as I'm writing it. And they surprise me sometimes. Sometimes I think it's going to be a shorter book or early chapter book or something. In this case, it became a full-length novel.
It's very, I cannot recommend this enough. And I think it says middle grade, but I think everyone can read it. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think it's very well done. So
I think it is somewhat of a crossover in terms of target audience. I wrote it for what I would call upper middle grade, like ages maybe 10 to 13 would be the target audience. But I've had quite a few adults read it who've given me feedback. And there's, I think because of some of the universal themes in it, that it's there's something to chew on there for all ages.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit. And I guess I did want to mention that when you were here for Claire's Hair, when I looked it up, and in fact, this morning in the studio, something that has never happened before, we use files to record the piece, and your file popped up. It's like a really random thing that would happen, that would be the next one in line, and that was from Claire's Hair, and that was almost 4 years ago, and sometimes it feels like that must have been a blink. But, I know it was 4 years, but wow, it's hard to believe that went that fast. And then I was thinking of that time, and if we knew then what we were going to go through in these last couple of years, I started thinking about, because I'm a worrier, a little bit of a worrier, and I thought, wow, if I knew what was coming in advance of the pandemic, I would have worried a whole lot. And then it started making, thinking about this idea of, would that have been worth it to worry that much? And so I wondered if you are a worrier too, and that was part of what started you writing The Worry Knot.
Well, there's no question about it that I consider myself kind of a professional worrier. I don't really remember, maybe it's because I just plain don't remember the earlier years of early childhood. I grew up on a farm, and it seemed like the worries were few. Worries might have dealt more with are the cows in the yard or something,
are the chores done? There's always chores.
Yes. But when I hit middle school, which was called junior high in my day, I went from when I started seventh grade, I went from having a class of the same 30 kids all the way through elementary school to moving to the bigger town where the junior high was in seventh grade. And so suddenly from 30 kids to over 200 in my class, and so many new faces, and the way you move from class to class instead of sticking with one teacher. And my worry chart, or whatever you call it, just shot up. And I think that my main worry then was fitting in. You're going through a big transition. And that's really where I got the idea for this is, what are kids today, what are they worried about? And as you said, are they looking ahead to the future and worrying about, or are they just thinking about today's worries? Mm-hmm. It could be both.
Yeah, and so in this book, we should talk about the characters and a little bit about the story to set it up, because it's a very relatable group of characters, and I have to compliment you, and you've done a brilliant job of helping us keep track of these characters. There's a lot of characters in the book, but I never once felt lost, never had to go, wait, who? And that's a sign of a really good writing when you're just immersed in the story and you can just take off. And so it starts with two brothers, and that's where everything's, centered around their relationship and their family. But tell us a little more about how they came to you, how you decided to tell this particular family story.
Sure. Well, I kind of describe this book, Paula, as a bit of a mashup between middle school angst and brotherly love. And, at its most basic level, it's about a seventh grader named Rourke Berger. And it kind of follows him through his seventh grade year. And as the title implies, he's a warrior. He's kind of a professional warrior like I was in seventh grade, I guess. What the story really boils down to in the end is a story of compassion for others, and especially about his vulnerable brother who is on the autism spectrum. And so it's that compassion story, as well as recognizing, that everyone has something to contribute without giving away the ending.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's their world of, how I think it's really an interesting dynamic for anyone to think about, if the attention is sometimes on the person with a different ability, then how does that affect the person who is trying to just make it through the world? And they have this added pressure. And I mean, I guess I've never really delved into that deeply. And this book opened up those doors for me and really it made me think about the family dynamics that happen and the way that, families can kind of become off kilter, or lose a little bit of everybody tries to find their place, and, mm-hmm. and that happens in all families, right? All kids think, well, mom loves so and so more. Mom always, is nicer to so and so. But there's that extra different element, mm-hmm. because
sometimes it, it's all perspective. Sometimes you feel that way, but you're really writing that story. It isn't really what somebody else is feeling. And I think you've hit it right on the nail on the head here with this, The Worry Knot, my debut middle grade novel, in that it's sometimes, depending upon the perspective of the reader, perhaps, you might think the story is about the person who's, It's told in first person, so it's Rourke, the seventh grader. You might think, these are his feelings and his worries. Or you might, as a reader, take on the feelings and the views of his best friend or his older brother, who, again, has challenges. And so I think that there's a little layering, multi-layering in this. There's also a kind of a class bully who is also, he kind of knows he's the most popular kid, and even though he's somewhat of a bully, everybody seems to be kind of attracted to him anyway and wants to be in a circle. And so there's all these different characters that what I was trying to do, Paula, in this is represent, you can't have 200 characters in a story. But I was trying to take a small group of characters who might represent some of the key personalities that you would find in any group, and in this case, a middle school.
Right, and it's absolutely right. There's even the parent's perspective, too, in here, that, I could see it through my eyes as a parent, and so that was really fun to discover. And one of the things I love, early in the book, there's this line from Rourke, and he says, I Googled remedies for worry. Stay active, don't drink alcohol, which, of course, a kid would discover, right? Write your own worries down and breathe. And it's kind of made me think, well, gosh, that shows that even when he Googled that, we kind of find adult answers for what to do with worry. And I think that we all worry, but sometimes it's harder for kids to manage that. And even at some point, Rourke says, this is getting weird. I worry about other people's worries. Like, he worries so much, he worries about what everybody else is worried about. So how did you get into the mindset of a seventh grader and discover his world and his worries?
Well, I didn't go over to the middle school and sit down and interview people, I will have to say. Because the kind of the tail end of this, the editing process was during the pandemic. The early stages of it, and by the way, it's so exciting to finally be sitting here and talking about this published book, because I started it 10, 12 years ago. And sometimes you just kind of get tired of your own work. And naturally, I wasn't working on it every single day for 10 years, in and out of it, in the editing stage and so on. But as I mentioned, I recall seventh grade as being that pivotal time for me. A lot of changes going on, you know, your body is changing and that's weird, and there's that hormone stuff, but there's also pressures that like competition for a place in, if you're trying out for cheerleading or a part in the play or the choir or something. And so things go from just like, you know, we're all friends and everybody gets a ribbon for participating to like, oh, somebody gets the part and somebody doesn't. So that's part of it, of how I kind of get into the head. But of course, it's been a long time ago since I was a seventh grader. So I have an opportunity, Paula, to still, even though I'm not an everyday classroom teacher, to get my kid fix by still doing some subbing in Northfield School District from everything kindergarten through high school, as well as I present to about, pre-pandemic anyway, about 10,000 students a year, either in author visits in schools or at young writer conferences, and including middle school kids. So I see and talk to them, and they're in my neighborhood. And I read a lot of middle grade novels. And to be perfectly honest, to answer this is a long way of answering the question, that's mainly how I kind of stay connected with what kids are reading and what characters of that age are doing and mm-hmm. how I should present them in a story.
Yeah, you've captured it. My kids just recently went through seventh grade, although their seventh grade was a pandemic seventh grade. So there's a lot. It actually made me a little sad thinking about, they didn't have dances. They didn't, get to do some of those traditional, basketball games, some of those things. So
yeah, there's it is a loss.
Yeah, it is.
Kind of.
But the worries, they were still there. They were the same. Folks, this is Art Zaney, Radio for the Imagination. I'm talking with Mary Blackwell. We're talking about her new book, The Worry Not, which is now available. It is out in print. You can find that at your local bookstore. You can also come to Content Bookstore for an event that's happening on, let's get that date right, it is Thursday, March 3rd, from 7 o'clock to 8:30, but it'll be a reading and time for conversation and questions, and I'm very much looking forward to that. And so it's very exciting to be able to, introduce the book to our listeners. I hope a lot of them will go and pick it up and read it over the weekend so that they can, come with lots of really good questions or even stories, because like you said, there's universality in a lot of these things that, I found myself flooded with memories of the things, mm-hmm. That happened. It's like, I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but yeah, that's exactly.
Yeah, and I've had other adults say the same thing that have read it, that it kind of took them back to seventh grade. And of course, it is for a middle school age reader, but I think that there is something in there for everybody. And by the way, speaking of that, At the end of the book, there are a few discussion questions, and so whether it's a middle school age book club or an adult book club, or whether you're a teacher who wants to use the book as a mentor text in the classroom for purposes of discussion, that those can kind of inspire or be a springboard for a good discussion too.
I think, yeah, it's set up perfect. And I'm so excited that there are book clubs in schools now. I didn't have that when I was a kid. I would have absolutely just, I devoured books. And so I didn't always get a chance to talk with people about them. So that's very exciting. There's, Rourke worries so much. There's a line in here that really just kind of says a lot. He says he wished that there was a terrible incident at school, and he just is so frustrated, and he gets in the car after he's had to go to the principal's office he had to go to. He wants his mom to drive them all, their whole family, to a land where no one minds if Carson is different and worry hasn't been invented yet. Oh, that was really
kind of heavy. And I think about, as a young child, I don't feel like I worried about things. And I think of that time as a period before worries were invented. You know,
interesting.
That innocence where you're not so much aware. But, Paul, I also want to mention that, you know, worry isn't a bad thing. It sometimes moves us into action and also makes us kind of empathize with others. But I think that what worry does, or what worry is a reflection of ourselves caring. Mm-hmm. You know, when we worry, it's because we care about our grades or our looks or our health or our friendships. But it's kind of how you can cope with them. That's critical. You know, if it gets you to a point like sometimes in the story, through most of the story, Rourke is tied up in stomach is tied up in knots, hard for him to sleep and so on. But if you can move on, worries aren't going to go away in our life. We have a lot of challenges, but if you can move on to a more positive place, then do something about them and maybe have a different perspective, that then worries can be, you know, an effective tool.
That's true, right? Because I think, like you said, it pushes us towards something, or makes us, you know, take on something that, you know, we can't even see if we make it through that, what great that might be bringing to us. And so that's a really good thing. You know, I did want to ask you, because Carson, his brother, as you mentioned, is on the autism spectrum. And there was a Kirkus review that mentioned that this was a middle grade novel that focuses on the lives of a neurotypical middle schooler and his neurodiverse brother. And those were different descriptors that I had not heard before. Is that something that, you know, in your work with trying to navigate this world of different abilities that has come through?
Those are kind of the, you know, I don't know if we'd call those the politically correct ways of describing typical behavior versus atypical, in this case, individuals on the autism spectrum. I kind of get my tongue twisted when I try to say neurodiverse for some reason, so I don't use it a lot. But I want to state that I am a parent of one of these neurodiverse individuals. One of our sons is on the autism spectrum. And so, you know, when you asked earlier about, you know, how did you kind of get into the world of this story, I certainly have that perspective as a parent. Although I spent a lot of time worrying, and still do, I guess, about him and his challenges and his future, what I've found out at this stage, because he's now an adult, is that I've seen such a positive impact that he has had in opening our family's eyes and lives, as well as others. And to know work of us, but just his own personality and reaching out. And so I wanted to write a story that shows not only the seriousness of worry, but also that it brings an uplifting message that when we all open our eyes a little bit wider and listen and watch, that things aren't always as they seem just from observation, that there's something underneath the surface there, and that everybody has something to contribute. So, you know, that's kind of the message that I was trying to bring.
Yeah, and that is always a challenge, that how do we use the words, because you want words to not point out things or make someone feel uncomfortable. And so I think we all struggle with how do we describe those differences.
The diagnosis, and then it comes labels and so on, and you do want to be careful. And so, again, The differences, yes, the focus of the story, because the book has to have a focus, is on the relationship between Rourke and his brother. But as one reads the story, you realize that Rourke really is kind of jumping to conclusions a little bit, not only about his brother's challenges, but other individuals that he encounters, friends, neighbors, and so on. And so it's not just about the difference that his brother has and his brother's challenges, but challenges that other characters in the book have.
Right. I thought that was really important because Carson is the brother and his differences might be more visible. And in fact, one of the others is part where, I think I put it, it was on this spot. Where he says, if your brother is Carson Berger, there are no far off places because his problems aren't quiet.
Yes. Because, whereas other things might be a little bit more quiet.
Right. That's what I loved is that the other, you know, everybody has these things and whatever they are in their life and they're not always as apparent. And if we can't see that in other people or recognize even that ourselves, sometimes we have mm-hmm. things we're dealing with that, you know, are hard to name or, you know, we might need somebody to help us with it. It's really, that was a really nice moment to develop these characters that way.
Thank you. I think that, kind of the takeaway I'm hoping that young readers at least get from this is that, you know, worry is a natural thing. It's a kind of in the human condition. But again, as I said earlier, it just shows that you care. And then for teachers and parents and so on, who maybe they can use this book as a tool to foster some healthy conversation. Because I think that books, at their kind of their basic level, it's we can use them as a safe place to process information and, again, a springboard for conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, Carson, I actually enjoy the way, you know, that he is so enthusiastic about, you know, what he sees in the world and counting and his collections of keys and, you know, the way that he, there's just a joy that, you know, he exudes, which doesn't always make Rourke feel so joyful sometimes when he has to navigate with him. Now he's at the same school. That's part of the other dilemma.
Yes.
And so, you know, being a seventh grader and then you've got this brother who's also, you know, gets pointed out several times. So it's really wonderful. Another thing, I'm going to talk a little bit about a writerly thing that I thought was very fascinating was that you open each chapter with kind of a journal entry or a thought or a insight maybe of each of the characters. And I haven't seen this before in a book, so I was really interested in this. It's not a chapter title and it's sort of a piece of the story, but it's not exactly the story that's inside that chapter, but it's very revealing of sort of what's going on inside a character or a thought. Tell me about developing that strategy. It really was a wonderful way to, you know, sort of keep in touch with all of the characters as the book was moving along and kind of revealing little bits to us.
Yes, well, you know, I tried this story from third person and then first person and back and forth.
Of course, yeah, there's so many versions.
And I, you have no idea. So we landed, and when I say we, because editor and I landed on first person, that's the way it was going to be told because it was so personal from Rourke's point of view. But again, a book will go on and on and on and be way too long if you're trying to tell everybody else what's going on in the life of other people, especially you don't know what's going on in somebody else's head if you're telling it from first person. So it was just, they're just little drips and drabbles. Is that a word?
Yeah, sure.
At the beginning of each chapter, and as you said, Paula, sometimes it's moms, or it's dads, or it's a friend. Just a one-liner, usually, of a thought that they're that they might have of a character in the book or their own lives, their own perspective, that's all of a sudden like, whoa, you know, from the main character's perspective, the first person, you're listening to it this way, but really, that isn't the way that person is thinking. So it, as you pointed out, it just gives a few insights without having to, you know, to devote a whole chapter to it.
I thought it was quite brilliant. I feel like it really added a depth to the story. And the little snippets are actually within themselves. You know, you could have whole discussions about, they're very profound, very philosophical or, you know, just insightful or telling, you know, some, I could see launching, like you said, you could do whole chapters about them,
yes.
But the way that you planted them, little seeds along the way, it's very well executed. So you may have started something. Because you're right, when you're trying to tell a story of a group of people, it's, you know, and you're trying to do it within a couple hundred pages, it gets extremely complicated. But this story is, it moves so quickly. And it, I mean, you really do masterfully take us into the world and the problems. And, you know, I just think you really get that right, the pacing of that.
Well, and as you've read it, and we don't want to give anything away here,
no,
so
we
any
don't.
Spoilers, but but there are some tense situations in this story. But I also want to point out, you know, because it's no matter what book I pick up, how serious it is, I kind of want a little bit of lightness in it,
too. Oh, that's
too.
In there, too. Right, yes.
And that's in there. You know, this is, the characters are in middle school for the most part. And, you know, if he's not worrying about, you know, how he looks and which side of his hair he's parted on, part of his head, I should say, to part his hair on, it's something silly about, you know, dancing with girls in gym class and
right.
That kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, the teachers, so, the way they describe the teachers just cracked me up. And the, I mean, there's a dance party. I found myself laughing with them, laughing with the family. You know, Carson has some really great zingers in there where you're like, oh my gosh, that is, he's so perceptive, and it's so perfectly timed, right? His lines. So that's in there too. We don't want people to think it's just about worries.
That's right. And the coping, I don't know how much time more we have here together, but naturally you want to address how does one cope with things? And there are interesting ways that Rourke looks at to cope, and doesn't he has some support, but one of the things that he kind of relies on is an imaginary friend. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of takes readers in another dimension too. I think there's a lot of good discussion that maybe could rebound as a result of that coping strategy that Rourke has.
Yeah, and Sam is that imaginary friend's name who becomes kind of a character within the book, too. It doesn't just stay within the world of Rourke's head. And I thought that was one of the brilliant lines. It's one of those little chapter openings, too, where Carson says, "Who is Sam? I hear Rourke talking to him sometimes."
Yes.
And I loved that, like that element of intimacy and that shared sort of compassion, I think, you know, especially because it's, you know, he's curious about Sam. And,
you know, Paul, I have to share this that, again, I've worked this story for over 10 years and I've reread that line and so on for hundreds of times. And when you read it, it kind of gives me shivers. It's almost as if I've been told it for the first time. And I'm hoping that the story is interesting and meaningful and, you know, has some depth to it for readers, and that there's a takeaway there of gaining perspective on the usefulness of worry and, but also taking it to the point where it can be an effective tool and not something that buries you and freezes you where you can't operate.
Right. And that is evident throughout the book. It's a very entertaining book. And but it also has those levels where you can sort of ponder things. And I think in middle school, kids are really primed for being curious about that and the world. But I think adults, too, will take away different experiences. And, you know, it reminds me just, you know, sometimes to think that, you know, the kids... I worry a lot, and they always tell me that, "Mom, you worry so much." And but that sometimes listening to their worries is really important too, because you know, theirs may be completely different than mine, and it's so it opens up those conversations. So there's so much to this book. It's just really a lovely, lovely, and I'm so excited for you to launch this, and I'm excited for people to meet you at Content. Oh, my favorite line about worrying in here is, "Don't waste today worrying about tomorrow." So what do you think? I think every time a writer writes a book, they learn something about the world. And I wonder what it is that this book taught you.
Boy, that's a good question. I have to think about that. I think it tells me, or it reminds me that, again, that, you know, worry is a natural human condition. And, you know, for an author, the trickiest part is, how do you end the story? You know, what note do you end it on? And then what do I want to bring to the world? And in this case, and in many cases for our different feelings that we have, on the last page of this book, you know, the main character's worries aren't going to go away. The challenges of his brother aren't going to fly away either.
No.
But he turns a corner. He turns the page, so to speak, on his own. And that's what I think life is. And for just a second, you know, getting back to the setting of this book being a middle school setting, primarily, that although it's one of the toughest, I think, transitions in life, as well as moving out of the house maybe and going to your first job or college or, you know, so on, I also think, and I hope that I did this in this story, it's also the setting and the time of Rourke's life when he grows the most, and he opens his eyes and realizes that you know, some of his coping strategies were not good ones, and that taking on new perspective really shows him that differences are a good thing, and that everybody has something to add.
I think that's a perfect conclusion. I have more questions, but we'll have to save them for the event at Content, which is, again, on, it's on Thursday, March 3rd, and 2022, if you're listening to a repeat, from 7 to 8:30. That's Content Bookstore in downtown Division Street, contentbookstore.com. And you can get more information about Mary at maryblackwell.com. The book, again, is The Worry Knot, Untangling Middle School Life. This was so much fun.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Having me back.
I love it. And folks, thank you for listening to Art Zany Radio. I sure hope that you will continue to tune your imagination with Art Zany. And of course, in the meantime, until next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany Radio for the Imagination with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault.
Stop in at Apple Chevrolet Buick Northfield.